You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Our passage this morning is an excerpt from one of those blockbuster moments in the book of Exodus when Moses comes down the mountain and presents the Ten Commandments to the people. I'm especially excited this morning to have my friend and colleague, Rabbi John Linder, sharing our Torah portion with us in both English and Hebrew. But before John reads us our text this morning, let me just set up some context for you. The Hebrews have recently escaped from Egypt, and right before our passage in chapter 19, they arrive at the base of Mount Sinai, and they end up staying for a very long time. They got away from Pharaoh. Now what? In Exodus 19:8, before Yahweh says anything about commandments, the Israelites say, "Whatever you command, we will listen to and obey. Whatever you want, because whatever you've got has got to be better than Pharaoh." Well, what they get is the Ten Commandments. Most of them are pretty obvious guidelines for living in community. Don't steal, don't lie, don't kill. But one of the commandments in particular is so radical an alternative to the commandments of the Pharaoh that it stands to this day as one of the unique gifts of Judaism to the world. Rabbi?
Hello, friends at the Fountains. What a joy it is for me to join you this morning. When you as a community say, "We put love first," I know it's for real because I know your pastor, my friend, David Felton, and he, of anyone I know, leads with love, and you so beautifully model that as a community. And an honor for me to read the verses about Shabbat this morning from the book of Exodus. And it strikes me that of the first 10 commandments, the first three are God-centered. We believe in one God, no sculptured images, don't swear falsely by the name of God. And the last six commandments are human-centric. Honor your mom and dad, and then those things that we are forbidden to do. But the key is, and I know Pastor Felton will talk about this morning, the key is the bridge of Shabbat, connecting God with us as human beings. If we can't carve out a day of rest, we cannot, in a profound way, connect with the divine in how to act in the world. So, the words for this morning. Zachor et yom ha-shabbat l'kadsho, sheshet yamim ta'avod v'asita kol malachtecha, v'yom ha-shvi'i shabbat l'adonai elohecha, lo ta'aseh kol malacha ata uvincha uvitecha, Abdecha v'amadcha, uvhem techa, v'gercha asher bisharecha, ki sheshet yamim asa Adonai, et hashamayim v'et haaretz, et hayam v'et kol asher ba, v'anach bayom hashvi'i, al ken berach Adonai, et yom hashabbat v'ikad shehu. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of the Lord your God. You shall not do any work, you, your son or daughter, your male or female slave, or your cattle, or the stranger who is within your settlements. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth and sea and all that is in them. And God rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Have a blessed Sabbath.
On my first visit to Jerusalem, I had a professor who years before had studied at a yeshiva to get a better understanding of Orthodox Jewish practices. In preparation for the Sabbath, one of Dr. Fleming's jobs at the yeshiva was to carefully tear individual squares off of the rolls of toilet paper and stack them next to each toilet. Why? Because the Rebbe at that particular yeshiva had ruled that tearing toilet paper off the roll was work, and you're not supposed to work on the Sabbath. If you're in an Orthodox neighborhood in Israel or New York City, you'll notice another particular Sabbath accommodation in hotels and other public places. But in LA, a few years ago, I walked into that bastion of Judaism, Ronald Reagan Hospital at UCLA, and voila, a Sabbath elevator. This is an elevator that stops and opens the door at every floor, going both up and down, so that no one has to work to push any buttons. It makes me wonder what the density of observant Jews has to be before a Shabbat elevator is introduced. Anyway, those are examples you might not see every day, but how about something closer to home? Imagine my surprise when, after we had a power outage at the house, I'm rebooting the display on our refrigerator, and all of a sudden the display flashes Sabbath mode and everything goes off. What? Well, for some super observant Jews, even turning on a light during Shabbat is considered work. So Sears has thoughtfully provided a Sabbath mode on their refrigerators, where when you open the fridge door, the lights don't come on. But close it quickly, because the compressor's not going to come on either, unless your refrigerator has a Sabbath delay switch on the compressor. That way, your actions can't be associated with actually turning the refrigerator on or off. Now, all of the examples are part of what have become a kind of over-the-top expression of an otherwise good idea. But to let the practice of Sabbath become some kind of show of public piety is by no means limited to the Jewish tradition. I don't know if you remember the 1981 film Chariots of Fire. It tells the true story of Eric Liddell, Scottish sprinter and Christian missionary who disqualified himself from his best event at the 1924 Olympics. Why? Because the race was on a Sunday, and his particular evangelical take on the Sabbath forbade him from running on the Sabbath. When I lived in Australia, arguably one of the least religious countries in the world, Sunday was a serious Sabbath, but not for religious purposes. A few folks actually went to church, but for most, it was simply a day off. Barbecue, sports, family, friends. And you seriously needed to plan ahead because all the shops were closed. And in all of Perth, at that time, a city of over 1 million people, gas stations took turns rotating which two would be open on any particular Sunday. That was it. People took the day off. It was a day set apart, a break from the rat race. But for most Christians and people in general, I think keeping of the Sabbath anymore is the one commandment that most people are pretty non-committal about. Whatever, it's just a quaint throwback to prehistoric times. But no, Sabbath is not a quaint throwback. It's probably the most revolutionary and radical of all of the commandments. Remember, the ancient world was one of ceaseless labor, day in and day out. So when the Jews told a creation story that includes even God taking a day off, we're talking something revolutionary. It made rest holy, something even God did. Genesis doesn't suggest a laborless utopian ideal, but it recognizes that non-doing and renewal are essential parts of life. In the first presentation of the Ten Commandments, our passage today, the connection is made between God resting and you and me resting. Our Exodus passage is crystal clear in saying that Rest is no longer the privilege of the rich. Children are free on this day. Even slaves can't be made to work. Immigrants can't be asked to work. What before was known as a privilege of the elite becomes a universal right for everyone. Even animals are free from labor on this day. So consider this for a minute. Not only does the biblical idea of Shabbat have no known parallel in the ancient world, the Sumerian, Babylonian, and Mesopotamian peoples all considered seven as unlucky. The Mesopotamian lunar calendar marks the 7th, 14th, 21st, and 28th days as jinxed and ill-omened. People were advised to stay home and minimize activities on those days. So, not surprisingly, the Jews come along, took this notion, and turned it on its head, making every seventh day an expression of holiness. In your face, Babylonian overlords. In Exodus 31, the Torah goes to even greater lengths to guarantee that Shabbat is central to people's lives. God says, "Keep my Sabbath as a sign between me and you for all generations." And just to be sure you're paying attention, God also adds, "Whoever does any work on this day shall be put to death." Thomas Cahill, author of The Gifts of the Jews, says that the Sabbath is one of the unique contributions of the Jews to the world, because in no other tradition is the daily grind of survival brought to a complete stop to contemplate things beyond basic survival. The idea is to punctuate the relentlessness of work with formal times of rest. And it doesn't take a lot of work to find Jesus seeking out times apart all over the Gospels. I like the way it's portrayed in Mark 6, where the disciples all crowd around Jesus, eager to tell all that they'd done and taught, and Jesus says to them, "Nice. Now, let's all go away for a while and find a deserted place where we can be by ourselves and rest." I like how Jesus adds, "Geez, there's so many people coming and going around here. We don't even have time to eat." It's another hint that Jesus was a Methodist. But anyway, I've been thinking about Sabbath since early on in this move towards shelter at home. And I read a poem by Lynn Unger, simply called Pandemic. In it, she asks, "What have you thought of this time as the Jews consider the Sabbath, the most sacred of times? Cease from travel. Cease from buying and selling. Give up just for now on trying to make the world different than it is. Sing. Pray. Touch only those to whom you commit your life. Center down." And that all sounded great, but as far as I can tell, for many people, we're several months into this and people are still left feeling as perpetually tired, run down, and exhausted as they were before. So what's the deal? Well, I think the deal is that we don't take seriously what Sabbath really means. I want to suggest to all of us, and yes, I am preaching to myself, that we get serious about practicing Shabbat as a spiritual discipline, even in this out-of-whack time. In their book, Spiritual RX, Fred and Marianne Brissatz recommend some tried and true practices for capturing the spirit of Sabbath. They're so simple, but they're not easy. I, for one, am going to pick a couple and set a goal of 6 hours. Then I'll work my way up to 8 hours, then 10. Maybe I can eventually get to a full 24 hours of Sabbath, but I'm going to start small. Check these out. Don't wear a watch or consult clocks. Put your smartphone in a box. Don't obsess over this suggestion. It's okay to be used in emergencies, but put it somewhere where you're not just mindlessly reaching for it all the time. Stop multitasking. Don't talk on the phone while you make dinner or walk down the street or while you're sitting with someone. If you're making dinner, focus on dinner. If you're washing dishes, wash the dishes. If you're watching TV, just watch TV. Try a day of silence. You'll find that when you don't speak, the pace of everything seems much slower and more deliberate. Thich Nhat Hanh, the Zen monk, has said, "Life is so short, we should all move more slowly." So go for a slow walk around your neighborhood. One of my spiritual mentors, Rabbi Rami Shapiro, suggests a plan that I'm going to aim for once we're able to gather together again in one another's homes. He says, pick a day, start at sunset one day, and go for 24 hours. Invite friends over that evening for dinner. Invite them to bring something to read aloud and discuss that helps elevate the conversation to spiritual topics. No TV, no computer. Reach out to loved ones. Write letters. Make handwritten journal entries. Take a long walk. Read that book that you've been putting off. Call that friend you haven't spoken to in ages. Now that really sounds good to me. It isn't simply a day off. It's a day to reflect, to broaden our perspective, to connect with others and the world in a way that doesn't involve furthering superficial goals and concerns. And as Barbara Brown Taylor says of practicing Shabbat, when you get anxious because you're not working and you're therefore of no worth, remember to just put away those thoughts, because what you're doing is following a bona fide commandment. It's right there, one of 10. And besides being a commandment, it's just good for us as human beings. As preacher Harry Emerson Fosdick has put it, one who cannot rest cannot work. One who cannot let go cannot hold on. One who cannot find footing cannot go forward. And here's something to think about as we do go forward. I've heard people talking about getting back to normal or adjusting to the new normal. But just the other day, I read an arresting comment from poet and activist Sonia Renee Taylor that whatever happens in the coming months, we will not go back to normal. Normal never was. Our pre-corona existence was not normal, other than we normalized greed, inequity, exhaustion, depletion, extraction, disconnection, confusion, rage, hoarding, hate, and lack. We should not long to return, my friends. We are being given the opportunity to stitch a new garment, one that fits all of humanity and nature. Right? I mean, it's hard to hear, but it's true. We've allowed greed and inequity, exhaustion, depletion, extraction, disconnection, confusion, rage, hoarding, hate, and lack become normal. And I've got to believe that not being intentional about setting aside time to disconnect, to distance ourselves from all the things that keep us distracted from the sacred, from our own thoughts, and from deepening our engagement with life, makes us vulnerable to being overwhelmed by the expedient, makes us slaves of the superficial. When we're intentional about keeping Sabbath, no matter how small a nod to the practice, we start to develop an attentiveness to life that otherwise gets overshadowed by the latest scandal or outrage or injustice that is visited upon us or our neighbors or the world. But if we take just one day, maybe just part of one day to start, just one intentional chunk of time where we resist the incessant drumbeat of life's distractions and expectations and slow down long enough to reconnect with what's important. Breathe deep and know that you are loved, not for what you do, but simply for who you are. Shabbat Shalom, and be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.